Welcome to the Rams Writer Podcast.
Tight angle, cross to Pearson. Pearson scores! Stephen Pearson scores for Derby County!
From Wisdom. He's round! By Cashin. Goal! Well, well! Back post. Forsyth heads on goal. It's looping. It's in! Derby has scored! It's Craig Forsyth with a looping header at the back post. Sibley shoots across. Goal! Yes! He scored! Lewis Sibley in the 90th minute! The goal we wanted has come!
Hello and welcome back to the Rams Writer Podcast with me, your host, Simon, and joining me as always, Chris Holt. It's been a while since we've last done a podcast due to circumstances beyond my control, as in I was called up for jury duty. Wasn't great. Didn't enjoy it one bit, but hey, done my civic duty. But we're back now. We've got lots to talk about. A few games have gone by. Paul Warne, people starting to question his appointment, weirdly enough. James Collins, has he been a big miss? Lots of injuries now mounting up. I believe it's 4-5 now. Probably got a squad of 14, it feels like. Desperate times, but we're going to discuss it all. First of all, I'm going to welcome Chris into the show. Chris, good afternoon. Afternoon, what time am I on? Good evening, my friend. How are we doing, mate?
Good evening. I'm on a microphone. You might be able to actually hear me this week.
Oh, you've upgraded, look. You've upgraded. See, yeah. I dug you in. Come on, and now look at you. You'll have your full setup now.
Last time I sounded like a drunken mermaid in 15-foot of water.
Now you just sound drunk.
I'm joking.
He's not drinking really. What you got tonight, Chris? Ribena.
I have got Ribena, funny enough.
See, look at that. Teetotal on this show by the size of things. How boring are we? No, look, not really.
Just want to say for the viewers who can't see, Simon's looking ripped on his screen here. He's been pushing the dumbbells and the weights, hadn't you, mate?
Well, you gotta stay healthy in this day and age, don't you? I've got two kids to think about, so I have lost a bit of weight.
It's either that or you're wearing a size small shirt. I can't tell which one.
Hold on, I don't know who this belonged to, but this was from, I don't know, it was given to me anyway from the club. Well, not from the club, but indirectly from the club. As you can see, it's a grey one, so it's quite old. I can't remember who was in charge when we had this. It might have been Clement, or was it McLaren on his sec? I can't remember. But yeah, it's a bit old, this one is. But yeah, anyway, Chris, we're going on. So I think we had quite a few good comments across social media over last night when I put the video out about the podcast. So I think, well, should we kick off and start with them?
Sounds a good plan.
Right. Well, we'll start off with Instagram. Instagram people, follow me, Rams Writer Podcast. So first question is from Jamie Orr 123. He says, do you think Horahan is still a starter, especially after poor performance at Derby and Ireland? Now, Conor Horahan is an interesting one, isn't he? You know, I think a lot of people, when we first signed him, he was, you know, a lot of people sort of like, yes, this is it. What a signing that is. Apart from a few goals, could he do more?
In what sense?
Well, for instance, we'll go to the Exeter game on Tuesday night. Obviously, we drew 0-0. It just felt like the game passed him by. I don't know if there's a bit of an imbalance in midfield or what, but something's just not right at the minute. I mean, you look at our past. So I'll tell you what, before we do that, we will just briefly go on on the games that we've missed. So obviously the last game that we, the game before we did was just before my birthday. So it was the Port Vale game. Lost 2-1 after going 1-0 up. A red card for Collins. Two penalties for Port Vale. Missed one, scored one. And a mistake at the back leading to winning goal. Probably should have. Well, I thought when we went 1-0 up, we'd go on, you know, a bit of cricket score, but turned out not to be. That was followed up, though, by a 3-0 hammering of Accrington Stanley away from home. Another away win for Paul Warne. William Asula bagging a brace in that game. So that was a good positive. And Tom Barkhuizen with his first of the season. We then played in the EFL Trophy against Man City, lost 3-1. That's Manchester City's under 21s. That game, I don't even. The EFL Trophy, Paul Warren made it clear after the Mansfield game, he's not really bothered about it, let's be honest. We then lost 1-0 against Ipswich, a game which we'd never really looked involved in. And ultimately, it was a mistake from Curtis Davis playing a short back pass that led to the goal. And then, obviously, last night, draw 0-0 against Exeter. Tuesday night, sorry, drawing 0-0 against Exeter at home. And so, yeah, I guess people weren't very happy. Haven't really been. A lot of people, not a lot. Well, I'd say quite a few have not been happy with the start that Warner's made. But, you know, so I heard some people say, we want Rossini back. He's made us a worse side. Obviously, he switched to a 3-5-2. He's using Barkhuizen and Mendes Lang as wing-backs. Midfield of, well, again, it was, I think, Knight, Horahan and Bird. But Knight's injured, so it's been Knight, Horahan and Smith. I don't know. The Horahan thing, I've seen a lot of people comment on Horahan's performances. Does he start, though, Chris? Do we need him in the side? Because he might drift in and out of games. But for me, he can grab you a goal. We saw that against Wickham. We saw that against Oxford.
I think one of the biggest problems you've got, though, Simon, is are we at a level of football that isn't his type of game? And I think that is really what the issue is with a lot of people, because he's a cultured, skilled footballer who, when given time, can create, you know, pretty much anything, both feet. His range is impeccable. I just feel that League One football, certainly the teams that like to get stuck in with a high press, he's struggling. Let's be honest, he's struggling. And I don't know whether it's motivation. I don't know whether he's going through a slump of form. I actually think it's more to do with the standard of the league. Mm. And we see this many times when players who come from, and this is just an opinion. You see players come from certain leagues around Europe and come across to England and just cannot cope with the fast pace of the Premier League. And I think this is a very similar scenario where you've got a lad who's so used to, well, he has played in League One before people start turning around and saying, oh, he's played in League One before. Yeah, I get it. But that's when he was younger, fitter, more agile. We're now talking about a guy in his early 30s who is the last sort of 5 or 6 years has played in the higher echelons. Yeah. So I don't know your thoughts on him. I just think it's the league that might be catching him up. The other option you could say is there's no one around him that's allowing him to create. Because obviously Jason Knight was a big factor missing from the games you've just mentioned.
Yeah, especially from the Ipswich game. I remember when after the game you texted me straight away, that was shit. Sorry about the language, but that's what you said, because it was poor, it was awful. And I remember saying too, we missed Knight in midfield. Now Knight is out for a month by the sounds of things, not great. You've got the midfield that we've got. That he's playing the three in midfield, where you're looking at Bird, Horahan, and another Sibley, Smith. Did I say Smith? Yeah, McGoldrick has even dropped into there. You are looking at it. Just doesn't seem balanced or right at all. There's just something. There's no one in there. There's no horrible git in there that's going to run around and put tackles in, do the horrible stuff, the hard work. There's nobody like that in there. You know, you've got Max Bird, technically gifted footballer. Not for me, not a defensive midfielder. Like I said a few weeks ago, that the stats said he was winning tackles and stuff. But for me, I'm not seeing it. He's another one. Games just seem to be passing him by, especially when he's captain, which we will come on to. And I just think we missed that. I'll say it. We missed that Graham Shinney type player, that John Eustace type style player. That one that I suppose can go a little bit unnoticed, but he puts that work in. He puts them tackles in. He wins that ball back. Bird, Horahan, don't get that from them. Smith, again, another one. I know he played CDM for Swansea, but I don't really see him winning balls. But he seems to be being the player that is being pushed further forward a bit more. So there's a lot of, you know, Horahan, again, technically gifted player, but midfield-wise, I think there's too much of a clash of players in there. That's where we're losing games at the minute, or, you know, making it hard for ourselves in games, is that battle in midfield. We're not winning it. And that, for me, is the issue at the moment, and it's going to need addressing. But the simple fact is, we've got injuries. We've got a small squad. We are running out of players. I think Paul Warne said in after his press conference after the Exeter game, it's sort of next one in. He's just got to pluck them out and go, right, see what you can do for me. My only thing is, see, the issue is at the moment as well is the centre-backs. Obviously, James Chester's out injured for 2 months. Davis has got to have surgery. That could be a month, maybe more. So who's your centre-backs at the moment? You know, you've got Barkhausen out, so that's sort of, again, somebody else that we need a wing-back. So Roberts played there against Exeter, thought he did a bloody good job. But does he put Stearman in? Because he didn't put Stearman in the other day. Put Fozzy in. Interesting move. Three left-footed players as centre-backs. Very interesting. So if he's going to put Stearman in, I wouldn't mind seeing Jake Rooney in midfield. As a centre-back, he knows how to defend. He knows how to win tackles. Will he be that person that's going to go around and start ratting? I know he's young, but can he do it?
Well, it's a very good question, Simon, because you actually look at what's left behind the starting 11 from Exeter. And like you said, they're dropping like flies at the moment for various reasons. There's obviously your favourite, Mr. Thompson. That's a possibility.
No.
So let's move on from that one.
I just think he's not strong enough to be that player. And he loses the ball far too easily for my liking. I just don't see it. He might prove me wrong. And to be honest, right now, I need him to prove me wrong. But simple fact is, from what I've seen this season, again, you said about Horahan and the league catching up with him. I think you said a couple of weeks ago about Thompson. He's been trained for nice football. He's not getting that in League One. That might be why he's struggling.
Just saying. Yeah, it's a valid point. I can't remember who put that question, like I said, on social media, but it's a really good point. And again, it just throws up a debate just between two of us here on a guy that when we signed at the start of pre-season, we were all genuinely excited, me and you included. And let's be honest, other than... he hit a brace, didn't he, in the game? Was it Oxford?
No, he scored his first goal against Oxford, and then he hit a brace against Wickham.
Wickham, that's correct. But let's be honest, since then, it's been... Again, is it the football? There's the other one. Is it the style of football he's being asked to play? Because we'll move on to that, going into other social media questions, because some of them are really interesting.
So we'll move on. The next one is, what do you think of Tom Barkhausen? That's from TCJH_ on Instagram. Come on, Chris. You're laughing. I'll let you answer that.
I like Tom, but I just think he's been completely put in the wrong position. You know, this is a guy that, had a little bit of a injury history of Preston towards the end of his career, but with them, or end of his time with them. But fundamentally, he was seldom out injured and always played as either a wide midfielder or an out-and-out winger. He's now been asked to play a wing-back role, which is a difficult, difficult role. And Paul Warne openly said that he doesn't expect Mendes, Lang and Barkhausen to last 10 games. Lo and behold, what happens? One of them goes after four?
Yeah.
Is it the style of football? Is it the demand that he's put on himself? I personally don't think he's been particularly great at all. In fact, I would say the game, I think it was Ipswich, in particular, I thought it was terrible.
Yeah,
to be honest, absolutely terrible. And I don't blame him. You've got He's on the wrong side of his natural foot for a start. He clearly doesn't like to play wing backs. I don't think he has the confidence to understand when to go and when not to go. And I think ultimately his body has paid the price.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip side, though, I actually thought he did pretty well against Accrington.
Yeah, so different level, though. Different level of standard, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you could. I mean, I know, obviously, Ipswich second in the league. You could tell they've been, they had that year last season just to get themselves accommodated with the league, I guess. They spent a shed load of money. And now they're obviously look like they're going to reap the rewards for it. They look a good side, but saying that, you know, they didn't, I know we didn't create any chances against Ipswich, didn't have any, it felt like, I think we had two shots off target and that was about it, but I don't even remember them. I don't even remember the shots. That's how bad it was. It was very boring to watch. So was Exeter game, very boring watch, especially first half.
Agreed.
But yeah, the Ipswich game, I think that ends 0-0 as well. I do believe that ends 0-0. Had it not been for the mistake from Davis, obviously Wildsmith saved the penalty as well in that game. Good lad. I've seen big improvements in him. Seems a lot, you know, a lot confident. Honestly, since Warren's come in, it's like having a different keeper now. So much more confident. You know, I remember, was it against Accrington, their penalty? You know, that first one he saved, the second one, he was giving mouth to the striker. He was in his head and the striker put it wide. You knew he was going to miss.
He went the right way again for that as well, didn't he?
He did, yeah, he did.
And indeed, if you include the Man City game, I think is that three games out of four he saved at least one penalty?
Exactly.
Incredible.
Next question is Galspen says, should we be rethinking our expectation for Derby County this season? Well, Christopher, in fairness, at the start of the season, I said we'd be mid-table. Then it got moved when we started playing all right. I think, okay, yeah, playoffs. I'm sticking with playoffs, to be honest. I think it is doable depending how January goes, if we can bring in players in January, which obviously we will get to. But now you were, I wouldn't say you were HMS Piss the League, but you were very adamant we'd get automatic promotion. You're smiling, Christopher. Sorry, I shouldn't call you by your Christian name. You're smiling, Chris. Yeah, that's it. You have a swig of your Ribena because I feel a big long chat coming on here. What are your expectations now? Have they changed?
Oh, what a question. Great question.
Positivity.
I am Mr. Positivity. You've got to remember when I'm still positive. I still believe we'll go up.
Automatically, or?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. When I saw the issues that Liam Rossini's football had, I didn't think there was many. The two main issues were that we couldn't finish. We were creating mid-teens minimum chances in a game. You look at all the games under Liam Rossini's tenure, and I think there was one particularly dry performance. But other than that, you look at the Plymouth game, they've shown the quality. And I just think that, again, that was a single mistake, that a couple of single mistakes that cost us the game. But, you know, we were 2-0 up against the top of the league. And I was confident when we beat, his last game was Wickham, wasn't it?
Rossini's.
So when we beat Wickham and played very, very well, I actually was more confident that we could iron out the problems that we had. Yeah, we just had a couple of defensive errors. They're still there, as Ipswich proven. But actually, the only issues we had was hitting the back of the net with all the chances being created. Now, role reversal, we've just played two games back-to-back in the space of 4 days, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we made the opposition keeper make one direct save.
Well, against Exeter?
And Ipswich combined.
Horahan free kick against Exeter.
Okay.
Then there's where he got sparked out.
Yeah, but direct shots that were good quality chances through direct play.
Oh, Horahan's free kick. That was about it.
Yeah, it's not even direct play, is it? That's a set piece. So yeah. What I'm saying is, when we were under...
Asula had a bit of a flick.
Yeah, But we were moaning under Liam Rossini saying, you know, we're getting 25 chances a game and can't hit one of them. Collins is struggling. Collins eventually finds his form, whether that is to do with Paul Warne's style of football. I question that because I think it's just a matter of things slot into place sooner or later, a little bit of luck. I just think that we've gone from being small issues which could resolve by speeding up the play and the tempo to now going completely more direct and you know, struggling to find even an opportunity to score. But going back to the original question, yeah, I still believe that we'll come in the top. I did say top two at the start of the season. So I'm holding on to straw, I'm clinging on by my nails there. So if you don't mind me saying, I'm going to drop into the top six and then we'll win the playoffs, because I think that there's going to be some wheeling and dealing certainly between now and February to get things resolved. There you go. I've said it. We'll still go up. It's what you call sit on the fence answer, Simon. We're still going up, but top six.
Via playoffs. Next one then is David Joyce on Facebook. Hi, Simon. I forgot about you. Sorry, mate. Hi, Simon. I'm not sure if you remember me saying to you when Paul Warne took over, I had my doubts over whether or not some of our players could keep up with his style of play, training, etc. Do now think that this has something to do with our injury issues? We just mentioned that. Also, I've noticed our players at times don't seem to read the next pass. On Tuesday night, Cash lumped the ball forward, Sibley went for it, crossed the ball, and most, if not all, were still more or less in midfield. This happened at least twice. I won't mention the rest of the situation. It's just a farce. It's an interesting point. That it's very, very good point. Yeah, obviously we mentioned about could his style of play be causing his injuries because they have mounted up. I think we've got to remember that when you look at them, the players, Barkhuizen, he's 20 something, isn't he? He's not quite 30 yet, or is he?
29 or was just 30?
Davis is 37, injury. Chester, his calf went, didn't it? He's 32, is it?
Chester's 32, yeah.
Knight was an impact injury, weren't it?
Yeah, and comes from a game that I didn't understand why he was involved.
No, I agree with that. Is there anyone else? Who else we got injured?
Collins is back through suspension.
That was the one I was missing. Yeah, so Collins was suspended, but he's back now.
Davis is done.
Yeah, done Davis.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, we have got some aged players. Could the training that and the work that Warne's trying to make them do be contributing to his injuries? And it's a tough one, isn't it? You know, these guys are athletes. Some of them, the likes of Davis at 37, perhaps, but like James Chester, just a calf going. I mean, to be honest, I thought he played, I've seen a bit of criticism slung his way, but I thought he was playing quite well before he got taken off against Exeter. But that might just be me, obviously. And then obviously goes on to say about the lack of players. Now, obviously, I know the situation he was talking about when Cashin banged one forward and Sibley looked across in the box, no one was there. And I think Paul Warne alluded to this in his post-match, that the first half was, there was no energy, no effort. And I think, you know, he said he basically gave the players a bit of a rollicking at half-time. And they came out second half. I think Dobbin came on, made a big impact. But I just feel that, like Warne said, it was too late. It was too late by that time. They'd wasted 45 minutes of football by not playing football. It felt at times it was like walking football. There was just nothing, was there, at all? And that's, for me, that's not a problem with tactics or personnel. Not a problem with tactics, but it's a problem with attitude. For me, if you're not going to go out there and put 100% in effort without getting a half-time rollicking, what are you doing? Don't get me wrong, not all of the players are like that. Yeah, I look at Hayden Roberts. I think that's the best game he's had in a Derby shirt for us by a long while.
Agreed.
Forsyth, very steady, very good. Cashin, again, solid. But Mendes Lang again. He's the first fullback I've seen him have problems with against Exeter, but he was trying. But again, like I said earlier on, Bird, Horahan, that midfield didn't really feel like they were getting much out of them. Asula up front and Sibley up front, again no service. Sibley I think did all right, but as you said, as you text me afterwards, oh no, sorry, as you tweeted, he got taken off because he put in a ridiculous challenge that wasn't needed. He gets booked, so he got taken off. McGoldrick came on at half time. The ball would not stick to his feet at all. His touch, his control was normally top class. It was woeful. It was like someone had been chucking a bouncy ball at him, because it just didn't stick. It wasn't great. And so I think the players need to look at themselves, you know, and like Paul Warne said, you know, that nice players don't win things in football.
It was very scathing about Sibley and what we've been saying for weeks and weeks.
It was. Yeah, well, and I don't blame him. Then I felt Sibley was doing all right, to be honest. And then he puts in a rash challenge. But that's it now. Now you're getting moved to wing back. You've messed it up because you can't control your temper.
My issue with Sibley on that game is he doesn't see the obvious pass.
Mm.
There's so many times that there was at least half a dozen times where there was an obvious 10-yard square ball that would allow a midfielder coming through into space to fill that 10 slot behind the forwards to either take a pop on goal or feed something through. But Sibley has it in his head still that he's Lionel Messi, and he still thinks he can take on three or four players. Okay, he's done it in the past. He does it once in a blue moon. Let's be honest. He's not a regular defender beater. Let's be completely clear about this. Yeah, he's got a bit of skill to him, but he's no world beater. And I just find that sometimes he's infuriating with his attitude towards distribution. As a coach myself, I would struggle with him. I would struggle to justify keeping him in a team that I would like to see three-touch, four-touch football. You know, you watch the likes of Ipswich play, they weren't trying to... Yeah, they didn't. They weren't particularly great on the night, but, you know, you look at Plymouth, for example, they weren't staying on the ball particularly long. Their distribution was 2-3-touch football. And, you know, I think one of Derby's biggest problems is we're on the ball too long. When we played under Rosinha, you didn't see particular individuals staying on the ball for a long period of time. What you saw was the ball being moved around with pace, with small touches. Yeah. So, you know, it's a situation that I think will now be looked at. But he wasn't the only one. I thought McGoldrick was an interesting substitution because I felt quite sorry for Asula, because if you remember, it was the same left side of ball down the touchline channel, 25 yards for Asula or Dobbin, whoever was playing in whatever particular game, to run onto. And I think once in the game against Exeter, he megged the fullback and got to the byline, and nothing really came out of the cross at the end.
That was Asula. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was the only time that it was successful.
Yeah, it was.
He pulls him off and then puts on a bloke up top on his own who's 34 years old and with the best will in the world. And I love McGoldrick, and I'm sounding negative here, but I don't mean to. I'm looking at this as more as a coach and tactical aspect. I do not understand why you go from, you know, David McGoldrick hasn't got the pace to break the back line.
No.
He's the kind of guy that holds up play and allows people to come through. But clearly, the midfield was having an absolute shocker. I didn't understand why he took the pace off, because that was the kind of game that was going to be won or lost by a mistake that happened to Curtis at Ipswich.
Yeah.
It was the same guy. It was exactly the same kind of scenario all the way through. Sooner or later, someone was going to make a mistake.
Yep.
And that's when you need pace to, you know, you jump onto something and then you allow them. But I just felt that he took them off too early.
Yeah, I mean, what I will say though, I think, I mean, we saw Asula and Dobbin partner up against Cambridge, and obviously Asula did his magic, scored a brace. We saw the same thing against Ipswich. Neither looked effective. Neither really had the chance to look effective. And then when Dobbin came on, obviously we switched to a 4-2-3-1 again in the second half against Exeter, and I think it was similar against Manchester City under-21s as well, when Dobbin and Asula up top. But there's times where they're obviously both young, both 18, 19. They're not looking for the pass for each other. There was times where Dobbin could have put it through to Asula and vice versa, Asula to Dobbin, which put them through on goal. But they've just not got it in their head at the minute. You know, at the minute, they get the ball in around the 18-yard box, and all they want to do is find a way for a shot to score. Whereas this is what we're going to get, hopefully, when James Collins is back. He's got to experience that now. So go, hang about, I'm not going to shoot it. There's a through ball onto either Dobbin or Asula, whoever he's partnered up there with, to score. So I'll come on to Collins now before we go back to the questions, because I'm on it now. James Collins, obviously, start of the season, it was, is he ever going to score a goal? Then he got a goal. Then he went a couple of games without scoring. Warnes come in. What does he do? Bang a brace on his on Warnes' first game. Then scores against Port Vale. And you're thinking, sweet, he's getting the best out of James Collins already. Then obviously he gets sent off against Port Vale, which I'm not sure about that decision. I think he just needs to keep his cool. Obviously, the referee, we won't go into that, was an absolute disgrace. I think so. It felt like someone had paid him off, to be honest, but we won't go into that. And I think since then we've missed him. He has been a big miss for us. I know he played against Man City, but again, it's another game where you've got a mixed bag of players, and in a game where he doesn't, I think Warren just wanted to get players some minutes in their legs, wasn't bothered about winning it or anything. But I do think James Collins has been a huge miss. You know, he can hold the ball up top. He's not all about pace. He's not all about getting in behind. So I think now he's back, hopefully we can start seeing improvements up top in the final third, because that's where we've been lacking. And sometimes it can take that one player that's been out, because if you think about it, when you've got Dobbin and Asula up front, both of them are looking to get in behind the defence. Whereas when you've got Collins, he'll look to come short and bring the defence out, create gaps for the runner, for Dobbin, for Mendes Lang, or whoever's playing. Sibley, if it is Sibley, Knight, Horahan, he creates a little bit of space in behind the defence, because he comes a little bit shorter, a little bit deeper to take the ball. We've missed that. And I think that's been a part of the problem. You know, I think Warren was absolutely gutted to lose him. He clearly thinks very highly of him. It makes you wonder if he was one of the players that he was looking at to bring in the summer.
I think he said that he was, if you remember. I think he spoke to him, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I think Smith also was another player he wanted. So I think come Saturday against Bristol Rovers, Collins will no doubt be on the starting lineup again. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I can't imagine. I think it's just whether who's he partnered with. Will it be Asula? Will it be Dobbin? Or will he play up there on his own?
Well, going back to the question, Simon, and I think this is also mentioned in a couple of other questions you will go through. Is it time now to go 4-3-3? And if we're going to play this high pressing game, you see, Paul Warren says that he wants to play this high press.
I'm not seeing it yet.
I haven't seen it yet, and that's including the games he's won. I have not seen the high press of intensity. Now, again, people will listen to this and turn around and go, you know, give him a break, blah, blah, blah. I've seen the press. There's a press and then there's a high press.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have not seen the high press, which now you could turn around. There's an argument that you're saying that we haven't got the players for it. But my argument would be, if you play a 4-3-3, shall we say, because clearly a five in the middle is not working.
No.
They're all looking at each other. you know, this 3-5-2 wing backs, they're all looking at each other to do something.
Yeah.
And I just think that if you've got a very physical, strong midfield two with a creative number three in midfield, and then you play two out and out pacey wingers, whether that'll be
Dobbin and Mendes Lang, surely.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can have Collins, you know, up front, and then you can spat my teeth out of them. Then you could replace him with a Sula. The other question I'll say, Simon, before we get into the rest of the social media point of view, which are, by the way, were excellent. Where's all the crosses that were promised? He told us it's a simple game. Mm. We get it wide to the fullbacks or the wing backs or whoever's playing down that channel, both sides, and they're going to whack it into the box. I'm sorry, but
yeah, I agree.
Can't remember.
No, I can't. I totally agree with you. I think we saw it against Cambridge, balls into the box. But other than that, we're not seeing it at all. And I think some players are still switched on to this Liam Rossini type of football. Rossini didn't put crosses into the box. He'd get the wing backs or the wingers at the time, I suppose, to the byline. But then they come closer and closer, maybe lay a ball back to the edge of the box. But again, obviously, it was brought up by David a minute ago. We're not getting players in the box. So it's like, no. And this is what I mean about lack of, you know, about attitude. If you're a footballer, whether you play up front or in midfield, get in the box. Get there, you know, you want to score goals. And that's, again, you mentioned the 4-3-3. Who'd you play in that midfield midfield three? Is it Bird, Horahan, and Smith? Rooney, Horahan, and Bird? Rooney, Horahan, and Smith?
Well, he's going to play Horahan as one for a start because he's going to say to the guy, prove me wrong. Mm. And then you go back to the dead ball situation. Either side of it clearly is a fan of Smith. I don't think he's particularly put a foot wrong.
I think he's been quite consistent
in the games.
As you like to say, he's a guaranteed 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10.
Yeah, it's a 6.5, 7 out of 10. You won't get what you see is what you get with Corey Smith, and we said that when we signed him. Mm. Rooney comes into it possibly. Does he give Sibley another chance? I personally don't think he will. Yeah, dilemmas, mate. That's why he gets paid big bucks.
Because I think the midfield is the problem. If you're lacking a midfield that's not creating, you're not going to score goals because the strikers aren't going to get any chance. They're going to have to latch onto scraps, basically. So that midfield has got to be sorted. I do feel that is the problem area. I know a lot of people, will come onto it now in a minute, a lot of people questioning the wing-backs, the 3-5-2, not having proper wing-backs. But that gives you width. And it gives you, it gives you that option then of going wide or coming back into the middle. And at the moment, we're trying to use the width. To be honest, what it feels like to me at the moment, we're relying a heck of a lot on Mendes Lang.
And who I don't think looks anywhere near the form he was in under Warne as he was with Rossini.
I think it's because he's been asked to do more.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and which is tough. I love Mendes Lang. I think he's an incredible player. You know, I think he's too good for this league. But when he's been asked to run the full length of the pitch for 90 minutes, there and back, he's going to tire, and he tires a lot quicker.
Well, he's not attacking fullbacks with full jets, is he? He's attacking fullbacks with his tank half empty.
Yeah, precisely. And it just feels at the minute that's what we're relying on because we're just not getting anything from midfield.
I agree.
I thought Bird had turned a corner against Cambridge, but he's turned back again.
Well, we had the discussion about Bird, didn't we? About if we could sell anybody to make 5 million quid. We both said Bird, didn't we? We both felt that. And have you noticed since they gave him the captain's armband again against Exeter, and it completely withdraws him out of the game. I have that armband does something to him. I don't know what it is, but he clearly gets affected by it. And also, my issue is, and this is very old school to me, I understand that there is a responsibility for a captain and you respect your captain, but I'm not convinced that if Max Bird tells a senior like Connor Horahan or James Chester or Corey Smith to do something, I'll be honest with you, mate. I'd struggle.
Yeah.
I understand you have to respect the captain, but if I turn around and I play 350 senior games and play for my country, and I'm being told by a guy who's inconsistent, who's now got the captain's armband, okay, he's been with Derby County for a long time. I understand that reason for giving him the armband, but surely when Davis goes off injured, you give it next the leader on the pitch who's been there, seen it, done it, and understands what it takes to grind out a result. I'm not convinced Max Bird would, you know, I wouldn't want to go into the trenches with Max Bird. I'll be straight with you. Love Max. I think he's a fantastic footballer.
Yeah.
But I'll be straight with you. We're going into the trenches in some of these games. And I'm sorry, but I'm not convinced I would want to go into the trenches with these nil-nils going into the final 10 minutes. 15. I just don't think he's the guy that I would want to make that 50-50 crunching tackle, because I don't think he'll give it you.
No, he wouldn't. We saw it. Was he captain against Port Vale? Yeah, he was. No, not in the game at all.
No.
Again, captain last night, on Tuesday night. Not in the game at all. It was poor.
Shocking.
To be honest, though, I know what you're saying, because I've not been in the sporting environment that, well, technically I almost have. But when I played rugby, as a 16, 17-year-old in my team, I was picked because I was ultimately one of the best players in my team, if not the best player in my team. I was one of the most aggressive, the most vocal, one of the strongest. Let's make you captain. Fine by me. Because I was quite vocal anyway beforehand. And I led by example, even without the captain's armband. When they gave me that captaincy, my game was totally different. I wasn't in games. I felt like I was concentrating more on what other people were doing rather than what I was doing.
You've exactly just about to say what I was going to say. That's exactly bang on, Simon.
And I think that's what's happened to Max Bird. So what happened was, I think they gave me 5 games as captaincy. And then they said, look, we feel you're better, you play better without the captaincy. We're going to give it to such and such. Sound fine by me, because I'd rather concentrate on my game. And that's what Max Bird, I feel, has happened to him.
Yeah,
he gets the armband, he goes, oh, he gets in a fluster. What's he doing? Where's he? What's he doing? Oh, no, Max, concentrate on your game. You need to lead by example. Don't worry about other people. Let Warren do that. Let him instruct players on the pitch, because we can hear him. You know, we can hear his voice. When we're playing against Man City, we can hear Warren more than anybody else on the telly or even at the ground. You know, and it was just a case, and I think it's a case of, you know, if you're going to give Max Bird the captaincy, then he needs to concentrate. If he can't do that, he needs to be stripped of that captaincy.
Agreed. I was gobsmacked that he got it back. I know he's vice captain and what have you. But again, you know, you turn around and you need something extra out of Conor Hourihan or Mendes Lang or someone who's been there, done it and got the T-shirt. They're going to turn around and go, you know, what are you showing me? As a leader, when Curtis Davis, and it, you know, Curtis has made a couple of mistakes this year, and that's another discussion for another time. But you would run through brick walls for him, because he leads by example. He's got the mindset, exactly what you said, which is a really, really good point, Simon. He's got the mentality and the mindset to be able to concentrate on his own game whilst having that focus and organisation to keep his team within a game when it's in the trenches. You know, and one thing that Paul Warren said today in his press conference, or sorry, yesterday, was that he does miss that Curtis Davis, you know, skill set of being a leader.
So change your captain. Who would you change it to? I'd change it to.
Well, I would give it Chester, but clearly he's out now. Go on, then. Who would you put?
Collins. You want somebody that's going to lead, that runs through brick walls, that knocks people about a bit, get his players going. It's James Collins. He's got that. He's about the only player in our side that's got that little horrible streak about him. Now, granted, I know he got sent off, but I think that was frustration. You know, he's blatantly pulled down for a penalty. He has tried to smack the ground, but unfortunately, he's hit the player. But
I'd give it Collins. Just okay. Simple fact, he's for me, he's a leader on that pitch.
You see, I think that's a really good shout. I like James Collins. You see, I think this comes down to who he chooses at centre half next game.
Yeah, I think he's going to stick with a centre back there as a captain.
Well, if he brings Stearman in, I'd give it Stearman.
But if know. For but, me, he's another Davis. Not as in, he just I don't know. It just seems to. There must be a reason why he's not being consistently picked, and why he wasn't picked over Fozzy.
I just find that captains up top, or between the sticks, always struggle to get a visualization of what's actually happening behind them or in front of them.
I'll give you that.
Hourihane is the other option that you could have, but again, at the moment, his game is not great at all, and putting that additional responsibility onto him. But he's a senior, he's an international. I just think that we now need to see Paul Warne make a very, very brave decision.
Yeah.
Because this decision of making Max Bird vice-captain was not made by him. It was made by Liam Rossini. So really, really good question that was, social media. Good. Again, it's a debate you could speak about all night. It's good to see that, you know, people out there are seeing the same problems that we're seeing.
So, Twitter then. Here we go. The wonderful word of Twitter. Paul Storm on Twitter says, for me, two things stand out about Warne so far as not being able to field a fully fit Collins and McGoldrick together. Second, we don't have wingbacks. Lang is wasted at wingback and Conor Hourihane is a passenger. So now why not play 4-4-2, taking Conor Hourihane out? I would not play McGoldrick and Collins up top together. There's no pace. You've just got two big trains, really.
That's a polite way of putting two lumps.
That's what I wanted to say. Maybe I picked the wrong transport, but I don't think you've said it all season that McGoldrick isn't a nine anymore. At 10, maybe if he plays slightly behind Collins, would that work? But is McGoldrick ever going to give you 90 minutes? At his age,
I think we've now seen why we managed to get McGoldrick.
Yeah,
I think
do you know what he reminds me of? What sort of player? Another player that sort of had one little patch of form, Hal Robson-Kanu. Came a couple of years ago when he scored an important goal for Wales, and he was a free agent at the time. He didn't have a club.
Against Belgium.
Yeah, and the next minute, did he go to West Brom after
West Brom?
And he was.
In the Premier League.
And he was...
shite.
Yeah. I'm not saying McGoldrick's shite, because we have seen some flashes of brilliance from him. But obviously, I mean, I think, like I said extra, he was awful. There's no disrespect. He just couldn't keep hold of the ball. And he's a big man.
And gave away a penalty against Ipswich, I believe.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
It was that was McGoldrick, wasn't
very
it?
Very soft penalty, that
but,
was.
But you're right. The going back to the comment... Who would you actually play up top as a front two then? If Collins is clearly going to be back in.
I know, and this is the debate now. Because he clearly likes his Dobbin, but obviously Asula's maybe... I'd go with Asula. Simple fact... Oh, I don't know. No, I would. I'd go with Asula because Dobbin, for me, wastes too many chances. I think he's been getting the opportunities and... He's not finding the onion bag as often as he should.
Here's one for you. Do you like Asula and you like Dobbin? And
I like both
of them have always looked stronger to me playing down a channel.
Oh yeah.
On the width. They've got that pace, and worst case scenario, they get tackled when it goes for a throw in deep and tear off. Mendes Lang up top with those shoulders and that responsibility of purely
the fridge.
Yeah, of purely running with that fridge style of his with a bit of skill with Collins the battering ram and then having Asula and Dobbin wide with their pace, and you can also rotate the three at any time. So if one of them isn't getting some change out of their fullback, you can quickly whip Mendes Lang out to either side and throw Dominus in the middle. I just think that sometimes something a little bit different up top works. And I always go back to, I'm showing my age here, Sheffield Wednesday played Paul Warhurst up front.
Right.
Who was a centre half. And in fact, he knocked Derby out of the FA Cup. Can you remember when we got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup? Nicholson scored an absolute screamer.
Yeah.
People forget that Paul Warhurst scored two goals against Derby that game and then scored the winner at Hillsborough. But what I'm saying is, we need to try, if we're going to go direct with this 20, 25-yard cross-angled pass, surely someone like Mendes Lang, with his power to go shoulder to shoulder with a centre half, is going to work. What's your thoughts?
I just feel we're taking too many players out of their natural positions. We're good at that.
Well, we've done it. He's done it already.
I know that. I take it you're looking at a big formation change then.
Well, you're looking at 4-4-2 or 4-3-3. To me, skip the wing backs until you've got them in.
Without doubt.
Until you've got them through the door, leave that formation on the board back at Moore Farm. Mm. Leave it there until you get two wing backs of caliber.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I get it, and I get what you're saying. And Mendes Lang, his pace would absolutely torture defenders, as it does in the channel. Asula, again, he's quick as well, though. He's very quick, Asula. You know, we saw his pace a few times. I don't know.
I'm just thinking.
Are you thinking outside the box? I know that.
I'm thinking his power in his anatomy, in his shoulders.
So this is, I take it, this is from your coaching aspect here, then?
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, you know, for those who may have not heard before, listen to the show, Chris is a coach. Mr. Coach, the Girls Academy. What else is your resume, Chris?
Because
I can't say that word.
Academy. I was with Derby County Ladies Academy. Fantastic set of girls.
No, I meant about basketball.
Oh, basketball. Yeah, I've coached basketball at a high level and managed. But again, we're now at a point, Simon, where we have got square pegs and round holes to fill.
Mm.
The reality is that the dreaded worry and concerns about having a very limited small squad, and yes, we put it together through adversity and Liam recruited them based on his philosophy. Mm. Been there, done that, we've got the T-shirt, we've had that discussion numerous times, and it rolls on Radio Derby. But if we're going to put square pegs in round holes until January, we might as well try some new square pegs. And I just think that Asula and Dobbin have not got that additional weight and strength. If pace ain't going to get you through, then your strength and battering a centre half for 70 minutes will. And eventually, look what happened to Curtis.
Yeah.
Against Ipswich. They were constantly... They wore him out. And eventually, the mistake came. Plymouth did the same with Cashin. They eventually wore him out with out chasing. And out.
They're turning him. They made him turn all game. Yeah. And had to chase.
And I'm saying to you, you're not going to get that out of Asula or Dobbin. But what you would get with Mendes Lang is a guy who's built like a beefcake, with Collins, who's also built like a... You call him a train. That's key. Let's call him locomotives or trains. They're gonna give back as much as they get. I don't think you'll get that with Asula and Dobbin in League One. I don't think Dobbin can terrorize a centre half with brute strength, because there's some bloody quick centre halves out there.
There is, but and I guess what I would say is that we know Dobbin and Asula both like a trick. They can take on their men.
They do, but what I'm saying is that...
As in being wingers. They've both got the pace for it. Dobbin give the wing, the fullback, when he came on, he gives the fullback nightmares.
Yeah.
you know, and so yeah, all right, Chris, I'll go with that. Yeah, let's do that. Who's your two in midfield then? If you're going 4-4-2,
I knew you were going
to
say that.
Ha ha ha
ha. Do you know what? I'd go probably with Smith and Horihan and drop Bird.
Who goes right back then?
Hayden Roberts.
Hayden Roberts a right back. Why not?
I know, but why not?
I take it are you going left back then?
Bozzy.
Who are you centre arse? Cashin and Stearman.
Cashin and Stearman or Cashin and Rooney. Why not? Or you could put Rooney at right back. It's fair, but like you said, is if you play him in centre half,
they're now putting triangle pegs in round holes now.
Simon,
I get what you're saying.
If Hayden Roberts is a natural left footer, I agree with you, but he's also a natural fullback. Yeah. He started off at centre half, but he can play the fullback role. This comes back down to people like Andre Wisdom at Portsmouth, who's apparently fully fit and looking for a club. You're looking for people.
Just bring him in.
Yeah. We clearly need a right back.
Oh, yeah, without doubt.
But what I'm saying is going back to Hayden Roberts at right back. Okay. We are pleasantly overloaded with left sided players at the moment, which is very rare in a football club. But it's more apparent when you've got a squad of what, 16, 17 fit players now.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that we've got to try something different because clearly it's just not working at the moment. We need to put aside the wins at Cambridge and the wins at Accrington, because Accrington missed two penalties and we could have been, you know, 2-1 down at that moment quite easily and down in the trenches again. Yeah. But a long ball and Asula then, yeah, pace. He goes with pace, you know, beats the defender.
It was like a little, it was like a tall version of Dean Sturridge. That's what he reminded me of then, the pace he showed.
Yeah, but that's the only time in the last four games when we've had a direct one-on-one, if you think about it. So I just think, why not try? Mendes Lang clearly is not doing us any favours at fullback. He's filled in to a position that clearly has nullified all his strengths. So to me, you why not put him up top and rotate him? It's just people could be laughing now and saying, you know, he's full of rubbish, that lad. But if I was as a coach and I look at what I've got left, I'm looking at winning the game 3-2,
yeah.
Winning the game 4-3. I'm not looking to win the game 1-0.
No.
Because the reality is, I ain't winning the game 1-0 with what I've got left. I just not.
No.
You know, all right, we've had two clean sheets. Sorry, we didn't have a clean sheet against Ipswich. We had a clean sheet against Exeter. We had a clean sheet against Cambridge. And all right, we had a clean sheet against Accrington. But what I'm saying is, going back to the last two games, we've also seen that when we try and play that way, we're not in the game. We were never in those games, Simon. That's the biggest concern. 180 minutes where we were never ever going to score.
No,
and we've gone, and it's frightening. It's very concerning.
I was sitting watching the Ipswich game with my missus, and she was like, "Have we had a shot yet?" And this was not long before they scored. I was like, "No, I don't think we have." And it that was reality. We hadn't looked dangerous one bit all game, and I think that then proceeded to happen in the Manchester City under-21s game, which I let go. I went, "Nah, I'm not bothered about that. Don't matter. I'm not fussed about the trophy, the EFL trophy." But then to see us turn up against Ipswich, then go to Exeter, and have 45 minutes in the first half like we did, where you're at home. You've just lost 1-0 to... So let's look at the previous games. You'd lost 3-1 to Man City under-21s in the EFL trophy. Nah, let it go under the carpet. You then lose to league leaders Ipswich due to a mistake where, again, there was no energy, no real tempo, didn't even look dangerous, didn't look like threatening, didn't even look like scoring. You go against Exeter, and what do you do for the first 45 minutes? Nothing. I was sat there watching this game going, what's going off here? I can't remember who the injury was to now. It might have been Chester, but
I think one of the mates texts and he says, "Are they having a Prozac break now?" Do you know what I mean? That's how bad it was. It was awful.
My dad said to me, he's never eaten so much at two football games.
Really?
Yeah.
It
was that bad. He just constantly ate. Yeah, we had two pies at the Exeter game. Two pies. That's how bad it was. You had to go down and get another just to get away from it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's just been poor. We will move on to the next. We've got a few more to go. To be honest, mate, we're covering everything I was going to talk about just for the social media stuff. So it's brilliant. Thank you for all you guys. Excellent comments. So Vicky B, regular, she likes to comment. Thoughts, if the Exeter keeper had been sent off for his challenge, he wouldn't have been on the pitch to be injured. Yeah, definitely. I don't think it was a red card. Looking back at it, he was outside the box. But if you look where the ball went, it landed to the two defenders that were there. I've seen him sent off for that, though. It was a high-risk challenge. But the fact we didn't even get a free kick for it, shocking.
Putting my referee's hat on, it's what is the intention of the keeper?
Well, he's not looking to take the ball. He's taking the player out. He's nowhere near the ball.
Well, if you're saying he's got no sole intention to take the player out, then and you're saying it's just a yellow.
Yeah.
The rules of the game state that if there's no intention to play that ball and you take out a guy in that, it's a red. I think it's a really good point by Vicky. I forgot about that. Good point, Vicky.
As a goalkeeper, though, when you're out there and you see it, you go, he knew he'd made a mistake and he shouldn't be out there.
A former keeper, Paul Warnes, as well.
I actually thought it was a decent keeper.
Yeah, it was at Rotherham when he played 21 times from a couple of years ago, didn't he?
We won't mention his antics at the weekend that he was caught doing, so.
Who, the keeper?
Yeah.
Or Paul Warnes?
No, the keeper. Did you not hear the Derby fans after he got knocked out?
No, what did he say?
Now you know how she felt.
Oh,
there was a video. Wow. I think it was the day before the game, or 2 days before. I seen it on the Exeter social media that they're aware of an incident. So as you do, someone's going to have the incident on the video, and they did. And apparently, he pushed or punched a girl or something.
Wow. Yeah.
So
that's disgusting.
Obviously, I don't know the full context. I'm not, you know what I mean? I don't know what happened, but
you see, to me, that's bang out of order. And let's hope he gets his comeuppance.
Yeah, damn right.
But two things. He should have got a yellow for his hair for a start.
That was awful, wasn't it?
I don't know where this half and half Sia style hair. He reminded me of the villain out of 101 Dalmatians. Is it Cruella de Vil?
Cruella de Vil?
Cruella de Vil. I normally don't swear on this podcast, Sam, but piss off. apologies, viewers under the age of 18. But going back to the challenge, you've got to look at it in the aspect of, as a rash challenge, is there any intention of playing the ball? Clearly, the referee thought he was attempting to play the ball, hence why he got a yellow. No, he didn't even get a yellow, did he?
Didn't get a free kick,
he got diddly squat.
Yeah, it wasn't even a foul. That was outrageous.
But I also, I don't know, it's a tough one because it comes back down to the argument we had before about the standard of the referees, because people keep moaning that we're getting absolute dog shite referees coming to Derby, but trust me, people.
Same across the league.
Yeah, these dog shite referees are going everywhere. And you look at all the hashtags of all the football clubs in League One and League Two. And it was openly admitted by the Premier League referee that went on with Ed on Radio Derby, wasn't it? Or Dominic Dietrich on a talking one night when he openly said that the refereeing standard is absolutely atrocious. And he doesn't blame the referees. He blames the fact that there's such a desperation for referees to be put into the top four tiers that they're being rushed through.
I that's not the first time I've heard. I think, was it Howard Webb? I think he was on TalkSport.
Well, he's back now, isn't he, running the whole show?
Yeah, well, he was on TalkSport. This is a few months ago now, and he was saying the same thing. There is a lack of referees, so they are being pushed through. Yeah. And
It's happening in my other sport that you don't like to mention, but it's happening in that sport too. I know it is. It's a common problem throughout sport, whether it's professional or semi-professional. No one wants to referee. There's a big culture shock and culture change in what people want to do. And ultimately, we're paying the price for it because people are dropping out of grassroots football because of some of the absurd, disgusting behavior.
God, it's horrendous, isn't it? Some of the videos I've seen this week.
Where does it come from?
Who got sent off the other week? Premier League manager got sent off for Klopp. Who got sent off last night for being the face of the manager, for being the face of the referee or fourth official?
I don't know. Who?
Conte.
Did he?
Yeah. Did you not see the Tottenham game?
No.
VAR ruled out a very, 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 very dubious decision by VAR.
Do you know
ruled
what?
Out a last minute goal, ruled out a last minute goal of Harry Kane. Antonio Conte's in the face of the fourth official or referee. Bang, sent off.
You know what? I actually very seldomly watch Champions League or Premier League football now because I'm at the point of view where League One's where it's at. Championship the last 13 years. I always end up watching games around where we are because I don't see the benefit. I'm one of those guys that doesn't see the fun of watching the Premier League on a Sunday, and people turn around and start spitting at their phones. How dare you? But I just follow football from whatever.
I used to be like that.
Wherever Derby are.
Yeah, I used to be like that. I'd always watch Championship and stuff on Friday night. But I don't bother anymore. I do watch the Premier League. I watch the Premier League if it's Arsenal or Man City playing. I'm not bothered about Liverpool, not bothered about Man United.
It's a different beast, mate. It's a different sport.
It is.
I don't get me wrong, I love to watch cultured skill sets in all forms of sport, whether it be football, basketball, cricket, wherever. And I'll watch the World Cup because obviously I'm patriotic.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is I'm one of these guys that just doesn't see the benefit of me watching Premier League games all weekend. Like, I've got a couple of bosses who watch three or four games, without question at the weekends. It's football. It's, Sunday football is three games now in the Premier League.
Your dad records them as well.
And I don't get it. I just don't understand. Like, I would rather watch Derby and then watch a game of highlights of a team that they're going to play in a week's time. Like, I watched the Bristol Rovers Chef Wednesday game, and it told me a lot about what we're about to face because we're in for a bloody tough game on Saturday.
Yeah. There we are. Anyway, I'll just continue Vicky's comment. So she says, keep up the great work, you two.
Oh, fantastic. Cheers,
appreciate Vicky. That, Vicky. Question, when are Paul Warren bubble hats coming back in stock? I know the club shop. I've asked the club shop today. I couldn't tell you, Vicky. To be honest, I've looked. Obviously, the podcast is affiliated with Kitbag UK. And I've looked on their site and I can't find any. I have emailed the guy who does this, and he's not got back to me yet. But yeah, if I get any sort of hint or anything, I'll let you know.
Rams Writer Podcast bobblehats may be available.
That means I've got to get creative. I tell you what, though, I'm digressing.
Yeah, sorry.
Do you know if you go on umbro.co.uk? They've got, obviously, everything's a template. Well, there's a template of a very similar shirt to the 1974 away kit and the home kit. Do you know the yellow and blue one? The yellow one with the blue trim on the sleeves, right? Yep. I showed that to our lass. She's gone and now bought it, and she's laminated a ram onto it. It looks mint, mate. It looks absolutely class. So, but yeah, we'll move on. So sorry, Vicky, I can't tell you about the hats. Mark Coote. Norway Mark on Twitter says, probably going to discuss this, but a back four for me with these players, a 4-2-3-1, as no one likes to admit to playing a 4-4-2 nowadays. Means dropping Bird or Horahan, but not like they would make any difference as they're not playing well together. He's got a point. They aren't playing well together, are they? Let's be honest.
No, we've discussed it previously. Another fan who clearly knows his knowledge of football, and yeah, he's absolutely right. Things need to change.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to see you comment about it. I know you did say a few weeks ago you're bringing back the question and answers. So, yeah, You spoke, we listened.
good comment, Mark. Really good comment.
Very good comment. And Jake says, Warren needs to bring players in January that fits his formation and style of play, but before January to push on. We are missing nice energy in midfield, definitely. Can we play Horahan and Bird together in the middle? Again, no. We are missing nice energy.
Massively.
And obviously, just on the January, in fact, I've got one more before. No, I'll do this, then I'll go to the last question. Lee Curtis, Derby Telegraph, put an article up there on something Warren said in his press conference about January. That there is a little budget, but he's going to have to pull in some favours.
Mm.
Whatever that means. So that's I take it that budget is going to be for wages.
Correct.
So we're not going to be able to. It's still going to be free in the loan market. How many loans are we allowed? Is it still five or is it three now? I don't know.
I thought, isn't there? And the amount you can have in your squad on match day is you can have a certain amount in the actual squad in general, but I think on match day, can't you only play a certain percentage of them?
Yeah,
I don't know. It works nowadays. I don't know if it was eight. Is it eight in the squad and five on match day? I can't remember.
However, one thing I think that has been. No one's really spoke about is a certain midfield player that we more than likely will get back in January from the sounds of things.
Yeah, if he doesn't get injured in Qatar.
I don't think he's going.
Isn't he really?
He's not been picked so far. That's Christian Bielik.
Mm.
Christian Bielik was pushed. Was told basically if he wants to play in the World Cup, he needs to play Championship football. When the squad Correct. Was picked out, when the qualifiers the other week wasn't picked.
Really? Although, interestingly, he's all over his social media loving Birmingham City.
Yeah, no, I think he's doing it for the clout, though, isn't he? But
I get that. But
he's already said Derby have got a recall clause and it's up to them.
Well, he's told a Polish channel, a radio station, that, you know, if Derby were in the trenches of getting promotion, he'd come back straight away. Not a problem. He's still waiting for the final decision on the World Cup. I'd be surprised if he isn't selected, Sam.
I know I would have. I would have known. Granted, I'm not doubting that. But still, he's a player that he's technically our player. So, and we have and whoever put the recall clause in was smart because we don't normally do that. He's a missing piece in that midfield.
Can you play him and Horahan though?
I reckon you can because. You could play that hurt me hand. You could play 4-3. Sorry, I just whacked my desk. You could play 4-3-3 then.
Yeah.
Bielik's the holder. We know what Bielik will give you. Bielik can create. Bielik can tackle. So it then frees up Smith and Horahan or Bird and Horahan to get forward. And if someone did come in for Bird in January, let him go. Let him fly away. Flap his wings.
I think that's the only good thing about. Missing Jason Knight out for a month with an injury. He comes off the radar.
Yeah.
Because if Burnley are pushing at the top and they've shown interest in him before, and Norwich are going to need to do something quickly to get back into the chase because they're starting to fall, I think Burnley would be a perfect place, someone like Knight. Interesting. Yeah, it's a good call about Bielik. Does he come back personally? I don't think he will. I'd love him back. I just don't think he will.
You don't think we'll recall him?
No.
Do you not?
No, I'd love to think that we will, but I just don't see how I'm not sure he's a poor warm player. If that he's a cultured. He needs the football to his feet.
Yeah,
and the way we're playing.
Look what he did at Charlton, though.
He's brilliant player. But what I'm saying is that wasn't under Paul Warren.
No, it wasn't. But I still think he can do a job.
Wasn't that under what's his name? Lee Bowyer. Who played good football, to be fair.
Yeah, but I just think he's that person in midfield that he doesn't matter if he's sitting deep. He can ping a ball wide.
Yeah. It's a really good point, Simon, and again, it's another discussion. I just think going back to you saying about his favours, he's obviously going back to his old club, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's obviously two or three players that are in that squad who are cultured League One players but are struggling in the Championship.
Yeah.
And at the moment, the priority is to get us out of bloody League One. Mm-hmm. So, let's not be surprised if two Rotherham players come through the door.
Yeah. So, the final question was,
from Waddo715 on Instagram. Favorite derby game you've been in the ground for?
Wow. That's a great question. Great question. Go on, Simon.
You've been in more than I have, let's be honest.
Cheeky bastard.
You have your git.
Yeah. 1976 was my first game.
There you go. Mine was 1992.
Wow. Okay.
And I was only a nipper at the time, so we're not going about it was like, well, ages. Favorite game that is a do you know what? There's a couple. And they're both draws saying that, actually. No, there's three of them, and they're all draws. You've obviously got the obvious, which is Forest 5-0 against Forest. There was a 3-3 against Sheffield Wednesday, where Malcolm Christie, did he get a hat-trick or did he get a brace? But I remember him, last-minute goal, we were 3-1 down. And we I think Branko Strupa came off the bench, scored. And then Malcolm Christie, he ran his socks off all game. He managed to flick one over Pavel Cernicek. It may have been an own goal, but I remember going nuts. And so that one. And then there's a 4-4 against Ipswich. The thing is, when you have a comeback, even if you draw, it sticks in your mind because you remember how good it feels. Comebacks are amazing. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've seen us play in the Premier League. I've seen us beat Man United at Old Trafford. But you know, I've seen us beat Liverpool at Pride Park. I've seen us beat Arsenal 3-1, sorry, at Pride Park. You know, I think Mark Pume saved the Ian Wright penalty in that game as well. Some special games, but I don't know. It's a tough one to say which one's a favourite. There's that many I've been to. Very hard to single-handedly pick one out.
Well, Chris? Okay. So, I'm going to choose three. One as a working theme, working at the club. One, the first time I cried at football. And
been there.
On one, because of the atmosphere. So working for Derby County, you know, for those years, many years, on and off 22 seasons, the one that sticks out to me is the Brighton Hove Albion playoff semi-final home leg.
I didn't mention that because I wasn't there.
I was on the mic.
Holiday.
I was on the mic that day, and I was just losing it completely. Every time we scored, it just got better and better. And, you know...
So it was your tears we could hear, was it, down the mic?
I was being turned down. I'm convinced I was being turned down by my producer. It was hilarious. I remember that game. As a fan, first time I cried at football was when we beat Rotherham, of all people. There you go, another connection. Trevor Christie scored a penalty at the baseball ground to get us out of the old Division 3.
Oh, see, I was at the bloody Crystal Palace game as well, where we won 2-1 at baseball ground.
Yeah.
We got promoted.
Yeah, yeah, it's there's a endure. I forgot about that game, but I remember crying with absolute relief at that game because it was never a penalty. The ref definitely gave it us, and it was a
I've seen the highlights like on YouTube.
Yeah,
I remember Graham Richards going. Wasn't it from like a free kick or something?
It was a free kick,
and it struck the wall. He gave a penalty. Handball.
Ludicrous. but that's a game that sticks out of mine. And for atmosphere alone, Sheffield Wednesday, Derby County 3, Sheffield Wednesday 3 in the FA Cup. The pop side was just ridiculous. You know, 24,000 at the baseball ground. Just, I remember my brother being crowd surfed from the back of the pop side down to the front. And we eventually got him back. He was only 14 at the time. And we eventually got him back with no shoes, no socks. And just God knows what happened to him. So I had to somehow carry him home with very little clothing. But just an incredible atmosphere. So yeah. So games perhaps that we've both mentioned there that wouldn't come to mind to others. But yeah, really good question.
So when you said about crying a game, I've obviously been going Derby games since 1992, since I was 5 years old. I'd not cried until, do you know when it was? And I think it was the same as you. It was relief.
Mm.
That was the West Brom, where we beat West Brom 3-1 under Lampard.
Yeah.
When Mason Bennett scored,
Yeah.
I was almost in tears, right? To make it 2-1. Yeah. When Harry Wilson scored that penalty, I was on my knees in the south stand crying, because where I used to sit in the south stand, or say sit stand or whatever you want to call it, it was just where you go up the steps and then you've got the barrier. I was there and I literally had my hands on the bar and I was on my knees crying. I was with my nephew at the time and he was looking at me like, so were you? It was just relief. It was sheer relief. Even though Borough were, you know, all we had to do was win and didn't matter what Borough did then. It was just the simple fact that you've been with this team all year. It's been one of the most dramatic seasons we'd ever seen. And obviously all the drama that followed Lampard around with it. I was in absolute tears. I didn't even cry when we beat Leeds 4-2. That was just sheer excitement and like, oh, we're going to Wembley.
I've never cried.
I didn't cry against QPR. I just thought fucking typical. Oh, excuse my language. I just thought that's typical Derby. That is. But
I've never cried in defeat. Never cried in defeat. Because I think relief tears. When you look at where the club had been, on both on those moments of crying at games, you know, the Trevor Christie goal, that penalty, the relief was we had been in the doldrums. You know, we were shockingly bad 3 years prior to that. Yeah. And just to get out of that shite league it was just, we didn't, Arthur Cox, you know, it was the start of the Arthur Cox era at the end of the day. And, you know, again, it's a great question. And I'd love, we should do an episode one night on.
We'll do a YouTube live so the fans can get involved.
Yeah, that'd be really, really good. Really good.
I can set that up. I'll sort that out. If you want us to do a YouTube live, comment when we put the thing out. In fact, what I'll do, those that listen on Spotify, I can put a question on Spotify, just out as a poll. I might do it on Twitter as well, actually. If you want us to go live and get involved, then we'll do it one night.
That'd be cool. Anyone who wanted to come on the show, well, that'd be a great idea, Sam.
Yeah. Sam, job's good. So just before we finish, Bristol City, do we recover?
Bristol Rovers.
Wrong league, sorry. Bristol. I knew I was going to get it wrong. I kept on saying all night, Bristol Rovers. And then literally when it comes to the main point, Bristol City. No, Bristol Rovers then. Obviously, they're a good team under Joe Barton.
Unbeaten the six.
It's going to be a tough game. Very tough game. But can we turn it around? Because this is our last home game now for a month.
Did you watch the highlights or anything of it yesterday against Sheffield Wednesday?
No, Christopher, I didn't.
Oh, were you watching that? Were you watching that Champions League stuff?
No, I wasn't actually. I was watching Kingsman: The Secret Service. Good film.
Okay, yeah, it is a good film. they are very good. People hate Joey Barton because, again, he's got a history of being a complete person, shall we say. I nearly said knob then.
You just did.
Yeah, so apologies. But basically, he dresses as if he's about to go in the away end anyway with his baseball cap and his bloody body warmer and his hoodie and his tight jeans and his trainers.
I believe it's called a gilet, not a body
gilet,
warmer.
A gilet. Yeah. You see, to me, off a gilet is what a cyclist wears to put his bottles in the back. You know, that's a gilet. I say body warmer, mate.
Old school. Okay.
Well, I tell you what. Did you see there's a post which is on Twitter today?
Yes,
from Football Accumulators.
And I retweeted that, right? And
it's an amazing bit of... Mm-hmm. I highly recommend anyone to look at that retweet that Simon's put, because to me, his coaching on that board doesn't need UEFA badges. That's the way he played.
It's not even a whiteboard. It's literally... a piece of paper.
Love it.
As in like a big A3 bit of paper. First thing it says at the top of it, it is 3 points available. Big start. Turn them early. Put in their off. 2-3-5-1-3-6. I don't know what that means. Squeeze space. Lock them in their off. Positive action. Goal mouth action. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And then there's some little side notes is written, which I won't go into because you can see it anyway.
I think also a control transition, I think, is the one in the middle.
Yeah.
He put something about controlling their transition, which basically, if you lose the ball and they break, make sure they don't get through the first phase or slow them down.
This is an interesting point as well. He's put 18 of us versus 18. Their fans can't help.
Correct.
So
it's on about the seven for people who are thinking we don't play 18 aside. That's seven on the bench. But he's a great manager. He's a motivator. Clearly, they're playing for him because they are a very, very good side. This is a team who came up last year, didn't they? On the last game of the season, they took, was it Northampton or Scunthorpe did it seven pass? Scunthorpe, wasn't it? He's got them playing, Simon. And I'll tell you what, if anyone thinks they're bringing 3,100 with them on Saturday, anyone thinks they're in, we're in for an easy game, prepared, because there's another team that are above us in the league, I believe. They're currently number two in the form guide. They beat Plymouth 2 weeks ago, I believe, if I remember rightly. I can't remember if it was at Bristol Rovers or Plymouth. They've got a wonderful work ethic, and right up to the last minute last night.
Right, Simon, they drew against Plymouth.
Did they? Apologies. Right up to the last minute last night, they should have won that game. They had a chance. They had 7 minutes of overtime, and they had a really good chance to win the game in the 96th minute. And if it wasn't for a last-ditch leg out save, which you're used to as a goalkeeper, mate, they would have come away with that 2-1. And I tell you what, Sheffield Wednesday were relieved.
Yeah, they were relieved. They could have gone above us if they won last night.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, but they're only a point behind us.
Yeah.
It's tight, the table is. I'm not going to lie. It's very tight. But
when your game's in hand and you're up there, mate. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Saturday because I think it's going to be a true show of the Paul Warne era.
Is where he's going to want a response.
Correct.
Can he get that response? And that's the only important thing. He got a response after the first half. Granted, we played a little bit better, weren't brilliant, but the energy was better, the intensity was better. Now he's got to do it for 90 minutes. And it's going to be, like I said, it's going against a side that don't take any prisoners. They're not bothered, do they, play?
Press high.
Press high.
Really high, yeah. And they've got Scott Sinclair in their team.
Is that where he's gone in the end?
Yeah, he can still do it as well.
Wow, fair enough. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well, mate. To be honest, can't wait to go back at Bride Park again, and yeah, enjoy ourselves. And score prediction then, and you can't say Davis now because he's injured.
Honestly, you're a person. You really are. do you know what? He can't have three bad games on the trot. He can't, because I think going into an away November, which is another discussion to have, where they're on the travels all the way through. Do you know what? I'm going to go for a really, really scrappy 1-0. And I'm Collins. I just think Collins will be chomping.
Yeah, I think you will know. I agree. I expect to see a big response. And Bristol Rovers even will scrap, will fight.
They play, though. They play.
Yeah, they do. They do play. Which is why I think it'll be a good game. Because I think I feel it's going to be a bit of an open game, to be honest. So I'm going to go 2-1. I'm going to go Collins and I'm going to go Asula for us, obviously. But what I will say, though, just quickly before we end it, is those... I remember when Corey, when we had Corey from Rams Review on here, and he was on about how would people react if Warne didn't go off to a great start. Well, now we're seeing it, that some people are saying he needs to go. Some people say bring back Rossini. No, you've got to think about it now. When Klaus brought Warne in, he gave him a 4-year deal. Warne's deal is longer than any players that we've got in the squad currently. That shows where the future lies. It's with Paul Warne. He's been here to do a job. You've got to look at, he is playing a formation that he's, that he likes, that he's not necessarily got the players for, but that's what he's comfortable with at the moment. He's desperate to bring players in January. No doubt he's already looking. No doubt he's already on the phone. We've also got injuries to key players as well. It's not as if he's just walked into a squad that is complete. We've still only got, I think I counted them the other day, I think we've got 23 senior players. Some of them are touch and go as well. But we have an 18-man squad. We've now lost 4 to injury, and then we've had Collins out suspended. So, I think for him to for him, for people to be calling him to be out, I think that's wrong, to be honest. I just don't see. I can't see it at the minute. I think he needs time, and we need to be patient. We definitely need to be patient as fans. We're not going to win every game. We're not entitled to win every game. Yes, we have got a good squad on paper, but that squad's being threatened now, like I said, by injuries. Don't you agree, Chris? He just needs time, and we've got to be patient with him.
Yeah, like you said, it's a 4-year project. there's me, the impatient one, who's saying that we're going to get promoted this year, this season. Yeah, he needs time. I think sometimes these problems that occur regarding system changes do open a lot of eyes up, and people all of a sudden have gone from the first away win under his first game. You know, we went into party mode, and here we go. We're gonna rock it up the league, and then obviously the last two games. What I will say is that he cannot afford to lose another game, because I think back to back is in the three have just done, because I think you've got to get these fans back on board, because as much as we love the idea of the Paul Warne model and how he's a leader and what have you, he's got to now show the kind of manager he is, and we'll find out more on Saturday than we will at any time. And you know, 4-year contract, Philip Cocu had a 4-year contract, although it was under another 10-year, and yes, it got ripped up by the previous owner. But this will also, the interesting thing is, this will also, I think, he made a hint yesterday that he wants the head of recruitment sorting.
Yeah, in the paper, in the Telegraph, Derby Telegraph, that was mentioned as well, that they are close to appointing a new head of recruitment.
Good, because there's still no football board, there's still no backroom staff. He's still at, or everything's still at ground level, Simon. And I think when he was at Rotherham, he never had to worry about anything else other than coaching managing. Now, at the moment, he's in a massive football club, and he's having to juggle many balls. And I think he's turned around and said, look, you know, your promises were made to me. Let's get it done. Yeah. So, yeah, stay patient. It'll come.
Yeah, magic. So there we go then. Show done. Guys, those of you that contributed, you've basically written our show for us tonight. So thank you very much.
Yeah, fantastic.
Remember, obviously, we'll continue to do that. We'll put it out. You know, any questions anybody's got, comments, and we'll read them out on the shows. We always do. And we'll talk through the shows. Like, as I said, when I first started doing this, what, 2-3 years ago now, I said, this podcast for you fans, you know, I'll talk about what you want me to talk about. And now me and Chris will now talk about what you want us to talk about. So thank you very much for everybody that's got involved and put their comments to us. Don't matter what the question is. Like I say, a lot of it was about tactics and or Warne and systems and players. Yeah, we had one guy that put in about favourite game. Doesn't matter. We'll still talk about it. So absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much, guys. Chris, as always, it's been a pleasure.
No problem. No problem, Simon.
Big smiles from Chris there.
Yeah, yeah. Have a good weekend, my friend.
Oh, hopefully. Fingers crossed for a Derby win. And yeah, as always, guys, like, subscribe. I need to put my teeth back in. Like, subscribe, and share. Retweet and all that sort of stuff. And we shall see you next time. And as always, come on, Derby.